Oh, science.
Oh, what was it? Welcome. Hi, this is Jan Sircone.
And this is Matt Kramer.
Here we are at
Ordinary Miracles.
Live from Ordinary Miracles.
We are live from Ordinary Miracles.
We're sitting in the store called Ordinary Miracles.
For those of you who don't know.
Yeah.
It's actually a real store in a real part of California called Sonoma County. And thank you for listening in. We'll probably have to say this a few times. We're doing something slightly different tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking at the Ordinary Miracles live BBS radio website, you'll see that tonight we are our own guests.
Welcome, Matt.
Welcome, Jan.
You're a great guy. I've got a nice little introduction written.
Okay, but note we will take emails tonight, and the email is very simply matt@mattkramer.com.
M-A-T-T.
At M-A-T-T-K-R-A.
M-E-R.
.com.
And what we're thinking is we had a guest tonight, but actually we got a little bit confused. And so it worked out well because we've been waiting to have this show. Matt is a specialist in relationships, and he's written a book. He's a mediator. He marries people. When I first met him, I thought this guy knows relationships inside and out. And so we talked a little bit about that and said, yeah, let's go for it. And then come to think of it, today we're passing back and forth some ideas, and in many ways we're total opposites in relationships. So I'm fairly new to the world of relationships, so I'm going to have a lot of questions. I have kind of a traditional, more old-fashioned, but being a light worker, what I call a new age person, I'm a little stuck sometimes in knowing what to do. So I'm looking forward to some enlightenment from you, Matt.
Okay. Well, what's interesting is in terms of do I know relationships inside out, I'd say that each relationship is unique. As a mediator, I've mediated a few hundred divorces over the years. I've mediated people who want to stay in relationship and not get divorced. I've mediated people who are considering getting married but realize they don't know what to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And the book that Jan referred to is called Conversations Before a Marriage. And after my first 50 or so divorce mediations, I'm kind of thinking over all these relationships, you know, and people got married, and for the most part, you know, it was till death do we part. And along the way, the relationship died. That's a good question. The death of what?
The death
of what do we part? And that in itself would be actually an interesting topic. So I looked at patterns as to why these marriages fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few basic ones that repeated over and over again. And one is that people have different ways of responding to conflict. So this is, of course, the mediator's approach to understanding relationships.
Is that gender-based, or is that pretty much an individual reaction based on their...
Oh, it's totally individual.
Okay.
I mean, it could be male or female has, you know, the same behavior characteristics.
Uh-huh.
And on one hand, we tend to be attracted to people who have something we lack.
Right.
So if somebody who's really quiet is attracting somebody who's really gregarious and outgoing, and the gregarious and outgoing person is maybe feeling like he or she has an audience and the one who's really quiet, mm-hmm. there's this initial attraction, which is part of the chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And that can work for 6 months to a year. I once took a course in couples therapy at UCLA, and Dr. Walter Brockelmans was the psychoanalyst who was leading that course. He had his own unique way of looking at the elements in a relationship. I remember I met him because he had called my office and was looking for a mediator to come and talk to his class of therapists about how mediators can help.
Mm-hmm. I often have heard that it's the thing that attracts you initially to your partner, for instance, the strong silent type, the thing that actually causes the breakup later. Because then the female, if she goes for the strong silent type, she says, the guy never talks to me. He's emotionally distant. He's cold.
Well, there's another window to that. Before we get there on your topic, I was in the music business for decades, and I would see, you know, somebody on stage being a great performer, adored by many in the audience,
mm-hmm.
and one of those folks in the audience would wind up in a relationship. And then, when the relationship was rolling, the non-performer would become jealous and insecure because the performer was still on stage with hundreds of adoring fans.
Uh-huh.
So what attracted them became an issue of conflict between them.
And how would you work that one out then? The person on stage would set boundaries. They would let all the women in the audience know. They would charismatically share all that charm for the performance, but when they came off, they would set boundaries. They wouldn't be available for intimacy with all of those women if they were already in a committed relationship.
Somebody who was solid and grounded and understood, you know, all those dynamics.
Right.
Yeah, and was also respectful of their mate and their mate's wishes.
Yes.
And actually, I've written a second book that is not published yet, but it takes the same structure as Conversations Before a Marriage, but it's written for people in the entertainment business to deal with conflict. It will be called And the Band Broke Up. And in there, I talk about the home relationships. You know, you're up late at night performing, and you come home, and maybe you're tired and want to go to sleep, and your spouse hasn't seen you all day.
Mm-hmm.
And wants to talk and share.
Right.
You know, and there's a schism there. How do you handle each other's needs?
Mm-hmm.
But back to the conflict element. Somebody who grew up in a family where everything was boisterous and conflict was maybe yelling and screaming and then kissing and making up, that's
mm-hmm.
one way of dealing with conflict. There's
mm-hmm.
nothing wrong with it. But they become attracted to somebody else who grew up in a family where if you don't have anything nice to say, you can go to your room.
Swept under the carpet.
Right.
Right.
So those people learn to deal with conflict in a different way. And what happens is, as when a conflict comes up, the boisterous one wants to yell and get it out right now. The other one needs to think about it, needs to go away and meditate on it. So as they try to leave, the boisterous one's insulted,
mm-hmm.
you know, and follows and says, you can't run away from me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that was one thing that really, you know, I saw as a problem in some relationships.
So that's not really gender-based, but a course I recently took said that males, when they feel an emotion, they do not want to have to respond right away. They prefer to think about it. This is generalization, but the quality of masculine, which can be within the female body as well,
mm-hmm.
that they tend to want to reflect and ponder so they don't make a mistake because they're success-oriented. Males like to catch the deer, and they don't want to make a mistake. They want to check all their outposts, all the facts,
uh-huh.
before they make that little move. So that's an interesting factoid.
And then how is the woman different?
Well, women like to talk about their emotions and talk about all the factoids. They love to multitask, go into all the different areas, and really pin it down, look underneath it, every side of it, and talk it to death. And males are like, don't suffocate me right now. Let me think about it. Let me go through my own logic, because they don't want all that emotion poured out on them, because they're reacting to all the emotion before they can sort it out logically.
Well, you say that a lot of men, especially in Western culture, are raised in an environment where emotion is not important or emotional expression is even seen as weakness. So they don't have a skill at processing emotion in the same way that women do.
That's exactly it. It's a taught skill. It's also developmental. I think as a man gets a little bit older and gets more comfortable with himself, he can do things more on the spot. But in general, a busy man that comes home from work and suddenly has things thrown at him might just put the wall up. He's had enough to think about all day. And I think just the way our society is even set up with the isolated male-female relationship makes it kind of tough. And that's a good way to lead into this program, is that I said, Matt, things are different now. We're in the new age. The young people are different. The way they are thinking about community and relationships, there's still this, I believe, an inner magnet, a polarity between the male and female. But we are moving. I mean, look at Eckhart Tolle. Am I saying that correctly?
I don't know if it's Tolle or Tolle.
And Glenda Green's book, Love Without End. We're moving towards a society where we need to have open hearts and love all people, where we need to be able to share love without judgment, labels, without limit. In fact, her book is Love Without End, and it's limitless love. So I've been thinking all the rules that we have around love. Let me tell you something fascinating that happened to me right after my divorce.
How long ago was that?
I was separated for a year, divorced for 2 years. And I had a very traditional, very monogamous marriage with an Italian man. So about 8 months after my divorce, I had a crush on this fellow. And I thought, well, I get what I want. And he was in another relationship. So I could tell we had a lot of nice energy and a really strong friendship with potential, but he was in a devoted relationship. So I went in the bathtub, and I laid in the bathtub, and I said, I'm a priestess, you know. I command time and space.
So priestess can lay in the bathtub.
A priestess definitely knows how to take a bath.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm talking the oils, the candles.
Oh, okay.
How to set sacred space. And I said, I am not leaving this bathtub until Jesus Christ himself, and I'm not sure why I picked him. Jesus was ascended master light being. I will not get out of this bath until Jesus himself tells me why I can't be with this man. This is Good Friday. And I laid there, and I laid there, and I laid there. My fingers were wrinkled. The water got cold. I am stubborn. Suddenly, a golden energy began to envelope my body, and I heard the voice that said, you are to love every person as you love this beloved. I said, what? Well, I can only love the one man. I'm a one-man woman, one, and I'm going to pour all my energy in him. He's going to love me back. We're going to have blinders on the rest of our life. Da-da-da-da.
Well, I assume with Jesus, he means a more cerebral and celestial kind of love.
We're going to talk about that, too. My friend the other day confided in me that Christ himself came into her in a vision, made love to her, opened her kundalini. She's a different person. There's a lot of things happening interdimensionally with all this, and that's where I'm going. The old rules about love don't work, so let me get back to the bathtub. He said, okay. He said, you ought to love everyone. I said, what do you mean? I can't do this. Try it. And I said, what about the man? And he said, he will come to you when he is ready, for you are his true home. So I got dressed, and I said, okay. God, if Christ came to me, God spoke to me through Christ. I went down to the store, and I bought something, I don't know, probably chocolate. And I looked into the eyes of the teller, and I said to my mind, I love you. I know your parents loved you. I love you. My life changed in that moment. That person gave me my change. And before that, I was the rich bitch, felt, why you should wait on me faster, why are you wearing that funny hat all the time, and da-da-da-da-da. My mind was so full of judgment and labels. I was told to love this person as I love this man, okay? And I was obsessed. So then I went and decided to buy an egg sandwich at the deli. And I said, I would like an egg sandwich. And I looked at this Indian woman like, I love you for making this sandwich. She made that sandwich with such care and love, and she handed it to me like it was gold, like she was, like I was a queen. It just was phenomenal. And then I did it with every person. And suddenly, people liked me. Suddenly, people treated me kindly like they loved me, and I had never had that in my entire life.
Would you say you transformed the way you considered the concept of love?
Yes, because my idea of love was romantic chemistry.
Was it goal-oriented in some way?
That is it. I think love, I think that it was probably fueled by fear.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I'm finding the edges of. Is our behavior around love doing for others so they won't leave us, or they'll do for us, or they will like us? Or is it a heartfelt expression of caring for the well-being, truly loving that person? Do we love people for the way they make us feel? If we're around a certain person and our chemicals are going and the way they treat us, do we truly love them or the way they make us feel? All of these things are up since I got my divorce. I'm thinking of all of them because it's confusing. What truly is love?
I was very fortunate once to hear Ashley Montague give a lecture. I think he was 94 at the time. And Ashley Montague was known in the 40s. He was a sociologist. He wrote a book called The Natural Superiority of Women. And you got a lot of flack for that.
You know, I love that already.
You got a lot of flack for that. But somebody in the audience said, what is love? And it was about a heartbeat, silence, and he said, love is the expression, not by your words, but by your actions, of your profound concern for the welfare of another.
That their welfare is as important as your own.
If not more so.
Now, this other thing you said is, my friend taught me this. He said, Jan, watch what men do, not what they say.
Mm-hmm.
When I got divorced, they would flatter me, this and this and this and this. But then if I see them doing the same thing for other women, were they really showing up for me? Or was it all talk? So that's another thing. The verbalization's all around love.
That's one of the reasons I suggest to people that if they're really enamored in a new relationship, try to become observers and put yourself in situations that are unusual or even stressful and watch how the other person responds.
Yep.
In the face of that stress.
They say that couples who meet each other, I read this on the dating service thing, and they have exciting adrenaline-producing activities. For instance, the fellow that I'm going out with now, we went to Egypt together, and there were some harrowing experiences.
For example?
And even though we actually had some thugs after us at the airport, and yes, we could have been gunned down. Without getting into a Middle Eastern incident here, we had some real meltdowns and some international things, and I made a police report. One of the Egyptian young guards with the machine gun told me to come with him. And I said, no, I'm not going with you. He wanted to be fresh with me, and he had a machine gun. Now, there's something wrong with that picture.
Well, that's about power imbalance. Now, also about cultural perception.
Exactly. And make a long story short, yeah, we had to have police guards.
Okay, so that's a good experience to see you and your friend under rather unusual stress.
Yes.
What did you learn about each other?
What I saw was is that his heart was good, that he did the right thing under pressure, even though maybe his nervous system and his composition of his personality didn't allow him to have all the energy to do what he needed to do. He never stopped caring and giving to people, and maybe to the expense of his own well-being. But I saw that as a quality. It's like Mr. Rogers, kind of. his gentleness and caring, for seeing that the well-being of everyone on that trip he took to heart.
Which was the same energy as when you had your enlightening conversation with Jesus and went out and loved everybody.
Yes.
And they resonated because we
yes.
put out energy.
Yes.
And how does that energy receive, and how does that
yes.
energy
So on
back?
This trip with this gentleman, I saw he is beloved. People love him for what he gives out.
And is that sometimes confusing?
It is confusing sometimes to other people who aren't used to it
mm-hmm.
and who want to take advantage of it because he is so caring and giving. And so me, as his smart little partner, points out when someone gets too strong of a crush and is moving in a little bit too close. And it's all in the learning. And
okay, I'd like to take off on a little tangent
mm-hmm.
because we're talking in general. And as a mediator,
okay.
people don't come to me when things are wonderful.
Right.
So people come to me when there's problems.
Right.
And sometimes the problem that I surface, you know, it comes in as one thing, and then I see it's something else. And what I'm talking about is abusive relationships.
Okay.
And
I'm sure we've got some listeners who are perking up at this.
And let me remind you that if you'd like to join the conversation, probably the easiest way is to send us an email to matt@mattkramer.com. And it's on the description of this week's show.
We should do just a very quick commercial here.
Oh,
live
we're digressing a lot, okay.
Live from Ordinary Miracles, Matt Kramer and Jan Sircone. Usually we talk about sound healing, but this is right on target because we are talking about resonance in relationships or dissonance. And actually the work that we do through our diagnostic computerized systems can actually tell you if you're having lots of vibrational issues in your body related to another person. I can actually look at a person's energetic profile and tell you if this other person's profile, if you will be hitting heads or if, in fact, you will be feeding the frequencies to nurture and strengthen your relationship.
This is your work doing voice bio.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying is if both sides of the couple come in and both do a voice bio with you,
mm-hmm.
you can look at what different tones
mm-hmm.
are resonant or suppressed and see how well they're lining up for each other.
Well, yes, I can see if fundamentally, if they're nourishing each other or repelling each other. It's that simple.
If they're repelling each other, why are they together?
Most likely that's not the case. Unless one of them has done a lot of healing, unless they came together in a very needy, codependent state, and then someone got healthier. For instance, women in abuse shelters, they're teaching them how to build up their vibrations on the side of their wave, and that helps them feel enough trust within their own body that they can break away from the males who have the outer edges of the wave. I'm simplifying this,
mm-hmm.
but it's all vibrational.
Hmm? Okay. In the work I do with voice mapping, different from voice bio, voice mapping works with buried and historical stress and trauma. And in the process of voice mapping, people are surfacing subconscious history that they're not aware that it's pulling their strings. And I've had people come up with an insight that I call, you know, just your regular psychology 101. You know, a woman will say, I just got it. All the guys I date are just like my dad. No wonder I'd never get anywhere with these guys. Which goes back to what I was going to say about Walter Brockelman's class at UCLA, mm-hmm. the couples therapy class, that in early relationships especially, often who we're attracted to is a personality that replicates the parent with whom we have unfinished business.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you a little story, because when he said that, I'm sitting in his class, I had a realization that was very huge for me. If anybody listening is a therapist, especially a woman therapist, maybe you can respond to this. The class was maybe about 40 people, and I would say it was about 70% women. And most of the women were warm and friendly, congenial, the kind of like, you know, maybe sort of mother types that
mm-hmm.
you want to go to as a therapist,
mm-hmm.
you know, listen to me, take care of me type of thing. Well, that's not what a therapist does. They'll listen to you, they don't take care of you. And I realized there was one woman in the room, the only one I had a charge for, and she was the one who had the kind of cold reserve
now,
that my
charge,
mother had.
Charge, you mean like a repulsion or like you needed to work with her and you were attracted to her?
She was the one I wanted to make smile.
Oh, you needed to, yeah. Please her, yeah.
Yeah.
Fix it.
And I realized she was the only woman in the room that was kind of like my mother. And I will say that my second wife, definitely, there was a moment about a week before we got married, I'm just thinking to myself, you know, she has, when she's unhappy or angry, she has the same kind of cold, reserved anger that my mother has. And then I said to myself, but I'm a big boy now, I can handle this.
Uh-oh.
And I was able to handle it for about 2 years.
Okay, I have a quick question. Sometimes when I'm overwhelmed in a conversation where we're getting into the deeper stuff, to let my partner know that I'm having trouble, I'm quiet. Is that passive-aggressive? I'm kind of quiet.
Well, the question would be, are you being quiet because you're not feeling safe revealing yourself?
I think that's my way of saying I can't just talk light anymore because right now I'm having feelings. So if I'm quiet for a while, that allows him to slow down the normal conversation and say, what's going on?
So he notices a change in your behavior.
Absolutely.
Okay, this reminds me of a tool.
Like conditioning.
Yeah. Well, I have a tool in my book,
mm-hmm.
and I will honor the person who gave me the tool. Her name is Bond Wright.
Mm-hmm.
She's a therapist down in Los Angeles, a Reikian therapist, mm-hmm. and she was my therapist in the middle 70s. And this tool is called the Paranoid Fantasy. And
I hope you're not going to say I have a paranoid fantasy when I stop talking.
Well, wait till I tell you about the tool and see what you think.
Okay.
This uses the word paranoia
mm-hmm.
in sort of a positive sense of enhanced awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you're in a relationship, you are consciously and subconsciously very aware of each other's behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so when something changes in that behavior,
mm-hmm.
You might be wondering, now one kind of person, me, says, did I do something wrong? Why is she being quiet?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas another person might say, well, what the hell's the matter with her? So the example I give in my book is to have an agreement
mm-hmm.
that if one person notices a change in the other, they can say, I'm having a paranoid fantasy. Can we talk about it?
Oh, okay.
The other person.
So the one who's being quiet should say that.
The one who notices a change in behavior.
Okay, all right.
The other one has two options. They can say, yes, let's sit down and talk.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can say, now's not the best time for me to talk,
mm-hmm.
and you set a time that is quiet and uninterrupted.
Right.
Then, when you are together, the job of the listener is to, without interrupting, hear and try to understand what the concern is of the person who had the paranoid fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then honor that fantasy. Find the realm of truth, or the kernel of truth
mm-hmm.
that's within the fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
So the example I give in my book is that the guy says, you've been really quiet lately. This actually is in the book that's going to be written by the musicians. And I'm wondering if you're more interested in somebody else. I see you're spending a lot of time with that drummer over there.
Your paranoia fantasy, yeah.
Right.
Help me know the truth.
Right.
Right.
And then the other responded in this case, well, yeah, I'm hanging out with the drummer because we're doing a lot of songwriting together.
Mm-hmm.
So trust me, there's nothing going on more than songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do have something I'm upset about.
Okay.
You know, and it's that we're getting ready for this trip, and you're such a procrastinator
mm-hmm.
that I'm just tired of, like, rushing at the last minute.
Yeah.
So here you've created a space where you're open to hearing each other, not being defensive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the reasons, another reason I see that people fall into divorce
mm-hmm.
is that in our culture, we are not trained to listen. We are told to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Children should be seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of children don't get the experience of being listened to. And when I say that, I mean being listened to by taking in what it is they have to say without the deadly sins of bad listening.
Interrupting.
Interrupting is one. Judging.
Correcting advice.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to fix.
Mm-hmm. A immediately, especially for children who need their own resources to come through.
They need to make mistakes to learn how to deal in the world.
And men don't like advice either. If they open up enough to be vulnerable, to really say what's in their heart, well, this is what I, you know, so a lot of things I say, Matt, I have to confess, I just took a course, and it's unbelievably fabulous, and this certainly could heal a lot of the rift between the male and female in our society.
If only everybody in the world would take the same course.
Well, I know it's pretty generic. I went there, and I've already said where I'm at with all this, but my daughter is a haughty feminist, and she said, Mom, it's good. Women are out there emasculating men. All of the women want men to be the perfect woman.
Robert Bly, right?
The perfect woman. No. This is celebrating men, satisfying women. And it really has beautiful, beautiful principles that are very simple and is changing the way mothers are mothering their young men and the way they're interacting with males. Call it manipulative, call it what you want. She says it's like learning the language of the male.
Mm-hmm.
Intrinsic in the male's biology, there are certain differences. So what she teaches us is that we actually, she was a frog farmer for many years. She'd meet really nice men, and then she would turn the prince and turn him into a frog. So what she teaches us to do is establish clear boundaries and enforce them with men. Continue to be strong and successful, yet not intimidating. We were all surprised to learn that men like happy, successful women. They like strong women. They like ones who are radiant, but ones who are receptive.
You'd say healthy men.
You're absolutely right. Healthy men, yeah. We know there's plenty of the others out there.
And I want to get to those later.
Expand your ability to receive from men without feeling passive or weak. Healthy men, what you can expect from them, how to recognize them, and how to deal with them. You know, that is a very good point, because we have a high level of wounding in the males in our society right now.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely high. And I think women are somewhat more sophisticated in relationships, more knowing and more emotionally evolved. Let's just face it, that seems to be the case right now.
Well, because women are relating from childhood. They're relating to their friends. They're sharing and processing how they feel, and they're fantasizing about their future relationships.
Mm-hmm.
While boys are out there learning how to win.
Mm-hmm. Catch the deer. I think, though, again, the new children, the new people coming in, they seem much more balanced in their masculine and feminine. I wanted to go into an area that we touched upon lightly today that scares the behebes out of me.
I'm not ready to go there yet. There's more in terms of general relationship, I think, to talk about.
All right. Okay. Let's do that.
Because I touched on earlier about abusive relationships.
Oh, did I do that properly? Was that good relationship for
yes,
me to
thank
back
you,
up?
Thank you for listening to me.
Yes, you are welcome.
Okay.
This is definitely a male-female thing we've got going here. Yeah.
Right. But sometimes in a mediation, I will uncover an abusive relationship.
Okay.
And it's generally the abusive party is there either because they have to be there or they have another agenda. And then I uncover the signs, the behaviors that lead me to suspect that it may be abusive. And there's a book called The Sociopath Next Door by Martha Stout. And Martha says, according to the APA, American Psychological Association, 4% of the population is clinically sociopathic. That's one person in 25.
That's pretty heavy duty.
Okay. Now, I differentiate between a sociopath and an adult child of an abusive upbringing.
Okay.
Children who grow up in abuse, generally, I'm generalizing here, and if you're a psychologist, email me and straighten me out. But one direction is caretaking. How does a child in an abusive environment take care of themselves? By taking care of the abuser.
Uh-huh, and then ending up being a rescuer when they
right.
grow up? The guy who rescues all the women in distress and...
Well, and the woman who keeps going after cold, unresponsive guys, because
mm-hmm.
that's the kind of father she grew up with, mm-hmm. and she's continually trying to please her father. But the other way...
So would those two attract each other, those two pairs?
Would I'd say after they've healed, because they would tend to go after, again, replicating that parent that they have unfinished business with.
Mm-hmm.
But an abusive personality and a sociopathic personality have very similar behavior traits.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I would love to educate the world about,
mm-hmm.
especially kids in school, that if mm-hmm. kids could have a class to educate them to understand these personalities. And I'll tell you a little story as an intro to it, and this is one I read in a magazine a long time ago, that young woman, constantly getting her heart broken by the bad boys.
Yeah.
You know, and she had nice guys as friends, but she was never attracted to the nice guys. They were just buddies. But whenever she got her heart broken, and maybe there was a nice guy who would kind of like help her get over it, and then she'd go back and be attracted to the next bad boy that came along. And one day she was too exhausted to push the nice guy away and fell into a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 years later, 4 years, my God, she's still in a relationship, and she likes it. And he's a nice guy. He's going, what happened here? And she figured out the thing with a nice guy is he's nice to everybody. So if he's nice to me, it's not special, because he's nice to everybody. But a bad boy who's a jerk, when he's nice to me, now I'm special, because I'm the one he's nice to. So, yeah, he's nice because you're the deer that he's out pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be very nice long enough to get you emotionally hooked.
Yes.
Then once he's made the conquest, it's back reverting to form. And then the girl's like, well, how can I get back to where we were? What do I have to do? And then there's all that stuff about abuse formulas that we don't have to go into right
now.
That
scares women to death.
Tell me more.
I was just in Glastonbury, and that makes a woman's uterus quiver to think that she has a partner, and then he pulls his love away.
Right.
And repeats the pattern somewhere else. It's like the birds and the bees, or she's the stationary flower, and he is the bee that goes from flower to flower, and she feels immobilized that he's moving on. Do you see?
Or he's changed the way he considers her. An abusive person stays in a relationship because they want the control and they want the power. But it's very seductive the way they pulled the partner in. And my understanding, it's 95% male to female as far as the abusive personalities. There are women who are abusive.
Yeah.
And I want to recommend a book to everybody out there called The Verbally Abusive Relationship by Patricia Evans. And time after time, I've given this book mostly to women and to some men and said, just read this. And they read it and they said, my God, that's me, and my God, that's him.
Well, the guy wouldn't necessarily, if he's trying to charm that woman, he's not necessarily going to be verbally abusive to her.
Not in the beginning.
Oh, but later.
There'll be little signs in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things is you go to a restaurant, how does he treat the waitress? And if he's abusive to the waitress, okay, that's a very good sign. Another sign early in the relationship is that within the first two dates, suddenly you're the most important thing in the world, and he is smothering you with his love and his need for you, and I can't live without you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some women have a bullshit detector, and they say, wait, that's way too fast.
Yep.
I'm not interested.
Uh-huh.
But women who have a lower self-esteem, you know, the ones who are still seeking desperately that love from their father, let's
mm-hmm.
say, this is what they've been wanting. They think, God, this is going to be heaven forever.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the predator's game, you know, and they are using their wiles.
I call them sniffers, and they are wizards at energy management, and they
mm-hmm.
know how to fish and wheel, you know, just reel them in.
And so I go back to your statement of love everybody. Because
mm-hmm.
in general, I truly believe most people are good.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that most people do want well for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so that innocent desire for everybody to do well, it's fine 96% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that 4% of the population, you wind up in their environment, unless you're educated to their nature, you're going to get hooked.
That is the scary part with this whole idea of sharing love freely with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's scary, because that's where maybe in a more defined community where you know people, But these vulnerable women, and I call them sniffers, they see when a woman comes out of divorce, when she's needy, they're opportunists, and they just jump right in there and, you know, take over her energy field. And, you know, it's hard for her to sort through.
And you hear the stories. You hear stories of very strong women, lawyers, for example, they get sucked into abusive relationships,
mm-hmm.
and then the patterns are generally the same.
Mm-hmm.
They become marginalized. They become ridiculed and criticized. Their ego is being suppressed.
Mm.
And part of the control is they are being cut off from friends and family.
Mm.
And one of the bizarre ironies of our mythological culture here is we have all these stories about unrequited love. And I see it as a subtle and invisible hypocrisy, where it's like, I cannot live without you, I must have you, you know, I will convince you. We have all these movie scenes where the woman's saying, no, 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 and the guy's portrayed as, you know, grabbing the woman, and this is what we're going to do, and all of a sudden, oh yeah, she falls in love.
Mm-hmm.
But what's not being perceived there is, he's disrespecting her intention, he's saying, I need you, I'm going to have you, I'm going to make you love me.
Right.
You know, and that...
Well,
is not a good foundation for a relationship.
They even say this in Celebrating Men Satisfying Women. The one that you have all this chemistry for, run the other way. Because all this fire, because in general, you're clouded and you're not going to be able to make the really basic decisions to get along with that person day in, day out.
Walter Brackelman's going back to UCLA. He said if you look physiologically at what happens in the human body, in the early stages of romance, attraction, and love.
It's addiction.
Well, you've also got a lot of physiological things going on. You've got new hormones coursing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually have chemical activity, neurotransmitters flashing in the brain.
Dopamine and endorphins.
All right. Now, 50,000 years ago is survival of the species, and that's mm-hmm. what the purpose of all that was for. You know, and you see it in the mayflies that mate once and they die and burn out.
Right.
All right. So you're not in your right mind in the early stages of love.
Well, this is the thing. Women are wired differently for love, and this is why all this free love doesn't work. If I have sex with a man, my body releases oxytocin. Now, for 3 weeks, biologically, until I know I'm not actually going to have that man be a husband in case I have a child from that joining, I am going to be obsessed that man must be there. I need him. That's nature's way to have the stabilization of the species. So a woman has that built in for 3 weeks, and if the man doesn't call, she will die. Now the man...
You know how many years?
3 days, oxytocin. 3 days. He's looking for the next
flower.
There is a problem here with the balance of the sexes right there.
There was a comedian once who said, you haven't called for a week. You know how long that is in girl years?
Yeah. Well, it's because it's biologically driven, and we do get very desperate, and then that's where you get that catty kind of competitive behavior, too. You know.
I can't remember the sociologist whose theory is that you know, way back primordial times, that sex was the tool that women used for security.
Mm-hmm.
It was the trading sex for the protection of the biggest male they could ensnare in that relationship.
Well, what's the word?
Anthropological sociology.
Right. I mean, look at the Amazon women. They had sex slaves all throughout history. There's been every type of different configuration. But right now, in today's society, I think we're going from a traditional to a more open relating way. However...
Now, there's a conservative element in this country that's going to disagree with you.
Well, I'm saying that in my circles, and especially the younger circles, however, there's still a very primary deep drive to have the primary male-female relationship, and many people want to get married, though I understand the trend is softening a little bit. So, but within that, there are many options
mm-hmm.
to have a primary relationship, and this is something you and I talked about.
Okay, we can go there now. Okay.
And it's definitely an issue. Now, it's almost like you told me that you believe in polyamory.
Polyamory, that's
correct. Sharing love with many different people. And I thought,
wait, let me clarify that.
Well, wait, I need to say something.
Okay, go ahead.
You know, you think all day you're going to say, it's like thinking that you're Irish, and I'm Irish, suddenly saying, he's not Irish at all. And now I'm thinking, all the different facets of Matt. Matt believes in polyamory. It's fascinating what that brings up in me. Fear, extreme fear.
And what? Okay, well, let me clarify polyamory, because it's not love with all kinds of people. Basically, my understanding, let me say that it's a fairly new definition, and the Internet has helped people who've had these feelings get to connect with each other, but there's no Bible of what is polyamory. There's a few mm-hmm. books written about it.
So each individual gets to decide.
Well, the general one is that we have an expanded capacity for love.
Oh, you do. You say we. You have more expanded capacity than me because you have this...
I think it's a question of conditioning, mm-hmm. cultural upbringing. So I'll be... Here's my...
You're already off on the wrong foot with me. You're going in the candy store and you're saying you don't want to fill one box. You fill all the boxes because you can, because you choose to.
Okay, let me come out of the closet
more
a bit
capacity.
Here. I mean, there's a few of my friends know that, you know, I believe or I live a polyamory lifestyle.
You said it.
Yeah. So I don't know how many of these my other friends are listening to this radio show right now. But I'll say this. That
this is great.
It first became aware to me in high school. Well, actually, no. I think it became aware to me, I can remember being 6 years old and just fantasizing, daydreaming, you know, being the Lone Ranger and going out and rescuing women, which is, you know, imagery you see in TV and movies.
The male.
Okay, so my fantasy, thinking back, I remember I'm 6 years old, I'm going, okay, I rescued this woman, I really love her, I'm going to take her to my ranch on the moon. And I take her to my ranch on the moon.
On the moon. That's okay. So sweet.
So the next time I have this fantasy, I'm rescuing another woman, and I take her up to the ranch on the moon, and the other woman, the first woman's still there. And we're all friends together.
You've got a harem, Matt. Where are
True.
The other males in this woman's
hey.
Life? There's something really wrong with this picture.
6 years old, what do you want?
Okay.
So.
Well, I'm just saying maybe you never grew up. You are my nightmare, a man.
Okay, so the next, experience was...
You better redeem yourself, mister.
Well, a story takes a while to unfold, Jan.
That's where we're opposite.
What? How are we opposite?
You tell a really good long story, and I'm like, get to the point.
But the point needs a foundation.
And that's why I'm doing my damnedest to listen. I'm not married.
And I am. high school. My first 3 years of high school, I was a wallflower, low self-esteem, I didn't connect with anybody. But suddenly, my senior year, I became one of the guys in this one little portion of the high school culture.
Mm-hmm.
And there were like four or five of my fellow high school students that I would date. And
Girls?
Oh, yes. I was dating girls. And I remember, you know, I would connect with some for a while. And then one day somebody said, let's have a movie party and let's all meet at the movie. And I called up five girlfriends and said, a bunch of us are having a movie party. Meet me inside a lobby.
You are my nightmare.
And the five of them showed up, looked at me, looked at each other, and got mad at me.
Yes, I would get totally livid.
Now, let me say this. 20 years later, one of them called me up and said, I've been thinking back, and I recognize what you were doing there, because you were just gathering your friends and the women you loved to share time together, and you were open to everybody.
You should have said, I'm inviting some other girlfriends. Don't you see you're working within the social
moray? Sure, I was young and dumb.
Yeah.
All right, so now let me move ahead 20, 30 years. And what I recognize is I would fall in love with somebody, and I truly love them and want to be with them. I'd meet somebody else, and I truly felt passion for them as well, not diminishing what I felt for the other one. But
this
I recognize...
is scary for women to hear this, Matt.
How many times are you going to say this?
Every time you say it, you got older, you still are in the same pattern.
All right, but if you went to a poly potluck mm-hmm. or a poly gathering, you would see pretty much fairly equal mix of men and women mm-hmm. who all feel the same way. And... for years, I had to keep these feelings in the closet. I didn't know that mm-hmm. other people felt this way. I thought, okay, I'm just...
Okay, it's one thing to feel this way. How is it lived out?
Okay, well, first let me say, I would get in a relationship, and I would just put a lid on myself.
Okay, we've got 5 minutes. I want to hear how this works.
Okay.
With being married, For instance, this is my thought. Okay, you're married. You see someone else. You call up and say, "Hun, I'm with such and such tonight. We're going to share energy."
No.
How does it work? Or do you see someone for a few weeks?
There's several ways that it works. There are poly groups that are two couples that live together. There are poly groups that are triads, either two men, one woman, or two women, one man.
Configuration.
Where the three have an equal, you know, balance and love and relationship with each other.
Triangles are very balanced.
Right. Now, there's another way it generally works out is you used the word primary earlier in the show.
Mm-hmm.
That there would be a primary relationship,
mm-hmm.
but that each of the people in the dyad has secondary or tertiary relationships. These are ongoing relationships. They have their unique boundaries.
That's what I want to hear. I want to hear.
Well, it took 55 minutes to get there, but
they're ongoing, and it's like the limnoscape, an infinity exchange of energy. It's not just the male out for variety.
Right.
I like this. Now, what my another idea, I'm loosening up here a little bit, is perhaps the other tertiary relationships can enhance the primary. Right?
I think they do.
They do. If the primaries have to be so stable in their self-knowing and authenticity and honesty and security of love.
There's a book called Radical Honesty. I'm forgetting the author's name. I think it's Barry.
It's a very tall order here.
Well, the thing is that when you are in relationship, are you in love with them for the projection you have of them? Or are you in love with the totality of who they are, because including the aspects you don't like?
Exactly.
You know, so if somebody snores real loudly, you don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, this shows you a doctor.
Then go sleep with your friend.
Right. You know, but that, you know, everybody's unique.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I love about women in general is each one is unique. Each one has unique gifts.
My boyfriend says, "Jan, there are as many configurations of relationships as there are people, and it's good for us just to stay out of our noses out of what works for them." Really?
Yeah.
It just needs to work for the people involved. Right.
Now, my understanding, you know, how did the concept of marriage come about, the monogamous marriage? And I believe it was imposed as a cultural and religious rule, as a way of controlling people.
Controlling, making them pay taxes, making them do this and that. And maybe it isn't natural, but my feeling is in these relationships, the potential for someone being hurt is much greater, because what's really called for is the maturity. The self-love, first of all, needs to be at an all-time high for people in these sorts of, you know, mixed relationships. Frankly, I'm not there. I want boundaries. I want a monogamous relationship, so don't invite me to your group anytime. But then on the other hand, I know intimacy, it could be, I have actually made love with the man just by putting our hands together for an hour, okay?
Those are aliens right here. That's like science fiction.
No, but the fact is it's energy.
Yeah.
See, so it's not even just intimate touching. And those are the things I'm beginning to explore now. Work being a sound healer, a priestess with energy. Is it having a tantric energetic experience? Is that cheating? Are you still in a monogamous relationship? I'm changing my whole idea. If love particles cannot be limited, why do I have these little slim tunnels? Do you see?
Well, there's several things. Part of us as human beings doesn't want anything to change. We want things to be secure and predictable. But for many of us, secure and predictable becomes stagnant and cloying and deaf.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So growth requires change, but change engenders resistance, hence conflict.
And we are moving, I believe, into new paradigms where we are going to be in our light bodies. And actually, I've had that experience of turning into pure light. And I think, well, then what? I actually can move in time and space. And then if I go visit a person, I have lucid dreams where I have sex with whoever I want. Do you see? Because there's no rules there. So,
That's safe within your fantasy, right?
Well, it's hard to know on which parallel, there's parallel reality. It's hard to know where I'm operating. Now, I have a friend who told me that when he feels like it, before I knew to set boundaries, he would twirl over and have sex with me energetically because he wanted to and he could.
And you didn't know he was doing it?
No. I would be sleeping and he would... So the fact is, we are in between paradigms right now, between being in our light bodies. So the whole idea is everyone should decide what works for them, not have it in concrete, know that tomorrow they could think of something else, and find people to play with energetically to show these particles of love so that it works for the moment. And I do say the moment because things are up for grabs.
Now, playing with the word should, because I don't know if it's mediation training.
Did I say should?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Nobody should do anything.
Thanks for calling me on
I wish upon everybody the option to explore, to accept, and embrace, not necessarily their own, but embrace the differences in others,
mm-hmm.
learn from them, and recognize every single one of us, including the sociopaths,
mm-hmm.
are doing what we think is the best thing we can do.
Yes. And when I say should, I'm saying in a perfect society, we should be sensitive and kind and caring and be as caring about the next person's heart and their well-being for their love sharing as we are for our own. That's what I mean by that.
Without draining our energy. But
exactly.
Evidently, you can't give away too much love. The more you give away, the more you have to give.
I think that's a great way to end the show.
My goodness. Obviously
are not on the same page. Matt, this was a great talk, and I think we are our best guests.
Well, maybe we'll do this again sometime.
I'd love to. Catch me a couple months. Maybe I will have stretched a little bit.
Well, put polyamory into your Google, and
you'll
see all kinds of different opinions on it.
I'll get some information. Well,
for those of you who stuck through the show, thank you for listening.
It's a wonderful talk.
Oh, next week we have Terry Daniel. Terry is a writer, an author, and her son died a couple of years ago now from a very debilitating disease. He was not able to speak for the last several years of his life, but as soon as he died, he started speaking to Terry. And she's written a book about with him, and Terry will be on our show next Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. So thank you all. Have a wonderful night.
Thank you, and good night. And good night, Matt. I love you.
Good night, Dan. I love you, too.
Good night.
Hi, this is Robert Lee Kemp, the host of the Mr. Destiny Radio Show here on bbsradio.com. Tune in Monday nights on the late night section at 7:30 Pacific and 10:30 Eastern. I want to invite you to come and listen in or participate in our lively and informative shows. Would you like to know something about your special destiny? How about your personal relationships or your finances? Are you thinking of moving but not sure when or if you should? Did you just meet somebody and want to know whether or not you are compatible? Would you like to know when you will meet somebody new or have more business success? Or would you like some help understanding your life and yourself? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I may have some answers for you. Tell me your birthday and I can reveal your secrets, maybe even secrets that you don't even know. The system I use is described in my two books, Cards of Your Destiny and Love Cards, available in all major bookstores. Your birthday is the key to your birth card, and that card tells me everything about you. I invite you to come and learn more. I hope to see you then.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Sal Bellois. You're listening to BBS Radio, Los Angeles, California. You can hear my tunes right here, so listen up.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Stream Guys.